As Ralph Nickleby ends his life, Nicholas returns to London in sorrow. He is shocked to hear the news of Ralph Nickleby's death, and his family share his grief over the loss of dear Smike.
Oh, Nicholas, my dear brother.
Kate.
I'm so glad to see you home again. I hoped and prayed you would not return alone.
Well, the house is emptier without dear Smike.
We must fill it with memories of him.
Indeed we must.
Though Kate and Nicholas are deeply upset at the loss of their friend, Mrs. Nickleby feels the burden of her grief more than anyone.
Oh, it was very natural for you, Nicholas, to be attached to him, and I am sure you were quite upset, but nobody knows what grief I suffer.
Mrs. Nickleby gives vent to her sorrows in her own peculiar fashion of considering herself first and foremost, Kate and Nicholas walk into the garden together.
We have been wearying for your return, Mama and I. And Madeline.
How is dear Madeline? Have any arrangements been made for her by the Cheerable Brothers?
No. Oh, Nicholas, I could not think of parting from her without sorrow.
No, Kate, nor I. I will tell you briefly and plainly, Kate. I love Madeline.
Dearest Nicholas... Well, you must tell.
Now, hush. No one must know. She least of all. I must forget my feelings, forget myself, and try to forget Madeline.
But Nicholas...
My mind is made up.
Nicholas...
Come now. Let's talk of you.
I have something to tell you also.
It concerns Frank, does it not?
Yes.
He has offered you his hand.
Yes. Which I refused, as you told me to do. I could not conceal from him that it was a pang... And a great trial. Oh, I wish it did not have to be so.
You did well, my good, brave girl. We must both resolve to harden our hearts. We are poor. And we must not repay all the Cheerables' kindness by taking their most precious possessions from them. Or by making them doubt our motives in being their friends.
Well, if it is really to be so... You should go to the Cheerables and confess all. Explain why we must shun the company of their nephew and their dearest friend. We owe them the truth, at least.
Very well. You are right. I shall go now, before my resolve can weaken.
Nicholas! It's good to see you again, my dear boy.
It is better than good, indeed. It is better even than that.
Dear brothers Cheerable, I must speak to you both on a most important matter.
Say on, my dear sir, say on.
And pray, do not look so cast down. What is the matter?
My dear gentlemen, when you took me into your confidence and dispatched me on those missions to Miss Bray...
Which you performed even better than we had dared hope, Mr. Nickleby, be assured of that.
You are very kind, but I should have told you that from the moment I first saw Miss Bray in your office... Her beauty made a very deep impression upon me, a very deep impression. And in truth, all I hoped and dreamed of was seeing her again.
Nevertheless, I'm sure you did not violate our confidence or take unworthy advantage of it.
I did not. I never for one instant spoke or looked but as I would have done had you been present. But each day, self-command and restraint becomes more and more difficult. In short, sir... I beseech you to remove this young lady from the charge of my mother and sister. For who can see her as I have seen her? Who can know what her life has been and not love her? I know I cannot.
Mr. Nickleby, we were wrong to expose a young man like you to this trial.
Yes, we should have foreseen what would happen. Madeline shall be removed from your mother's care.
I'm afraid, sir, that there is something else.
It concerns Frank, does it not?
It does, sir.
Ah, Frank... Let us say no more upon the subject.
I understand. But if you'll allow me a few more moments of your time, I want you to know how deeply grateful I am to you for everything.
Don't mention it, Mr. Nickleby.
Not another word.
But I must. On my behalf and on behalf of my whole family, you have made us all so very happy. Kate has found a best friend in Madeline, and I, too, have very warm feelings for Frank. I hope all can be put right soon.
It can and it will.
It will and it can.
And you too, Mr. Cheerables, have been like fathers to me. I hope that if you will allow me, I may live and die in your service.
As Nicholas finishes speaking, Charles and Ned turn their heads from his and appear to be having trouble with some grit in their eyes.
You speak well,
Mr. Nickleby.
And you have acted most honourably. We shall not forget it.
Nicholas is comforted by their words, but later troubled that he must have offended them in some way, for they seem distant and occupied at work, and have no time for visiting the cottage, which once they used to do with such delight.
More tea, Nicholas?
No, thank you, Mother.
What did you say, Kate?
Nothing, Mama.
Was that a knock at the door?
No, Mama.
And so the Nicklebys spend some lonely days and lonelier evenings in their cottage, with only their thoughts for company, until finally...
Nicholas! Kate! The Cheerable Brothers have invited us to dinner!
Mrs. Nickleby, who is troubled night and day by visions of a hot messenger tearing up to the door to announce that Nicholas has been taken into partnership with the Cheerables, believes this invitation may herald the fulfilment of her dream.
I think I shall wear a simple grey silk with my cream silk gloves.
My dear Mrs. Nickleby.
Oh, Mr. Cheerable. Mr. Cheerable.
Oh, Kate, Nicholas, welcome, welcome.
A very great pleasure to see you, sir.
Come in, come in.
We're glad to see you both in excellent health.
Oh, it seems so long since we were honoured with your company. Miss Nickleby, tell me, have you seen Madeline since she left your house?
No, not once. And I have had but one letter. I do not believe she would have forgotten me quite so soon.
Go into that room yonder, my dear, and see if there isn't a letter waiting for you.
Very well.
And Nicholas, forgive us, won't you, Mrs. Nickleby, for just one moment. Nicholas, perhaps you would follow Brother Charles and myself into this room for a moment. We have a surprise for you. Several surprises.
Nicholas, my dear friend.
My dear friend. Young men, shake hands. We wish to see you close and firm friends.
I need no bidding for that, for I wish the same thing.
And I also.
And now, we ask you to look at this. It is a copy of the will of Madeline Bray's maternal grandfather, bequeathing her the sum of £12,000, payable on her coming of age or marrying. Now, the document was stolen and only just recovered. Now, Frank... You were the one who recovered this deed. Will you become a suitor for her hand?
No, sir. I believe her heart belongs to someone who has 1,000 times more claim upon her gratitude than I or any other man could urge.
He speaks well, Brother Charles.
Yes.
For Madeline's heart is occupied, most worthily, by you, Mr. Nickleby.
By me?
By me? Are you sure?
Yeah, extremely sure. She chooses as we, her dearest friends, would have her choose. And Frank chooses as we would have him choose. He chooses your sister Kate.
But you know we have no money.
My dear sir, why would we have him or Madeline or anyone marry for money when youth, beauty, and every amiable virtue and excellence were to be had for love? You acted nobly, not knowing our sentiments. But now you do know them, and you must do as you are bid. Oh, you're so very fierce, Brother Ned. And now, bring Kate in, for she is with Madeline in the other room.
Madeline, my dear.
Nicholas.
Kate.
Frank, dearest Frank.
You see, I would not take no for an answer, Kate.
Madeline, you have made me the happiest man in the world.
This is all that I hoped for from the very first moment I saw you.
And I you, Frank.
Truly, truly.
Yes.
I pray you that all the lovers be free to go and talk among themselves. Turn them out, Brother Charles, everyone.
Mrs. Nickleby is, of course, quite overcome by the happiness of the moment, which she expresses by an outpouring of copious weeping, wringing her handkerchief and leaning alternately on Charles and Ned Cheerable for support.
Oh, no one can be happier than I. I am sure Kate and Frank and Nicholas and Madeline consider themselves happy, but my happiness is beyond description. But if I were to try to describe it, I should say it is like a sunrise.
And so the evening is an occasion of merriment, laughter, and much joy. Nicholas Nickleby, meanwhile, resolves to travel to Yorkshire to pay one final visit to Dotheboys Hall.
Do not be afraid. It is I, Nicholas Nickleby. I have news. The best news. Squeers has been sent beyond the seas for his crimes. Yeah. He can hurt you no longer. Yeah. Dotheboys Hall exists no more. Yeah. You are all free to go.
Such joy and cheer has never before been felt inside the walls of Dotheboys Hall. The boys take flight, relief and hope speeding them on, and within 5 minutes, the school is deserted. Nicholas then makes his way to his good friends, the Browdies. He tells them the glad news about the school and the sad news about Smike, and invites them to the weddings of himself and Madeline and Kate and Frank.
My dear friends, I shall never forget the comfort and support you gave me on my long, difficult journey. But I feel an easier, happier path lies ahead of us now. Goodbye and God bless you.
And so, Nicholas returns home. And after her term of mourning has passed, Madeline gives her hand to Nicholas. And on the same day, and at the same time, Kate becomes Mrs. Frank Cheerable.
I am so proud. Nobody could be more proud than I am today. Oh, Miss La Creevy, there you are. What a peculiar little dress you are wearing. No, don't come any nearer. I fear your peach bonnet does a disservice to my lilac ensemble. Over there, if you please. A little further. No, a little further. Beyond that shrub. There. Splendid.
On the day of their wedding, Madeline's fortune comes to Nicholas, and he invests all the money in the firm of the Cheerable Brothers, in which Frank has now become a partner. Before long, the business becomes known as Cheerable and Nickleby, just as Mrs. Nickleby has so often predicted. With Ralph Nickleby dead, Nicholas can live his life in peace. He buys back his father's old house in Devonshire and installs Newman Noggs as caretaker. Here in the family home, Nicholas spends many happy years with his friends, his family, his children, and of course, the memory of dear Smike. The grass is green above the dead boy's grave, and trodden by feet so small and light that not a daisy droops beneath their pressure. Garlands of fresh flowers rest upon the stone, and when the children come to place them there, their eyes fill with tears, and they speak low and softly of their poor dead cousins.